You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Well, do you want to get started then?
I think we should, because my my stuff is working. I'm happy. You know, I did it on the solo thing that I recorded for like Weird Science, but.
Oh yeah. By the way, I listened to that today.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of how I figured out that you had new equipment, because you were talking about it on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I posted pictures on Instagram, but I don't think you really get into that. So.
I really don't. I don't. Yeah. I don't go on Instagram very often. I want to. I should, because you know, with photography, it's a pretty it's pretty heavily used in the photography world. So.
Right. Let's see. How should we do this? Mel Brooks movies. If I Google that, I've got like all of them kind of lined up.
I usually go by go on IMDb.
Yeah.
And I looked them up this afternoon. Now there's a lot of movies that I have not seen of Mel Brooks, but the ones that are, you know, I think they're the more popular ones, I think a lot of people will, you know, enjoy listening to talk about. So there's a couple in there that I remember knowing of, but didn't know them all.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get the
okay. Do you want to do like we did with the icons, start reading them off from like the beginning of the 70s?
Well, I was just looking to see, is it just, I mean, is it the ones that he starred in, or I mean, had a place in, or is it ones that he was, is it director, producer?
I looked him up as a, like, writer under what he wrote, because he's in quite a few of the movies that he wrote, too.
Right, right.
And the ones that you'll recognize that I think most people know, you'll know that he's the writer for it.
Okay. All right. So then we'll go based on his writing credits. Got it. 70s, 80s, 90s. Okay. So you want to lead?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I can do that.
Okay. I mean, well, we talk about changing roles out. So, I mean, why not?
Okay. Well, I guess I can do the intro too then, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I just got a message about a dog.
Okay.
Let me just tell her I'll get back to her later.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just verifying that I'm recording.
Cool. To another episode of Banzai Retro Club. We're going to be doing an icon show tonight. We're going to be talking about Mel Brooks and a lot of the movies that he's been involved with, either mostly writing a lot of the movies that we'll be talking about, and also starring in some of them too. You know, he's been in quite a few of his own written movies that. Once we get into it, we'll be able to break it down. But with me tonight is Dave, and I'm Scott.
Yeah, but we don't call it, it's not Dave, it's Frankenstein.
Frederick. Frederick Frankenstein?
Yes.
Yes. Igor?
Yes.
Instead of Igor?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, we're going to talk about Mel Brooks, and I'll start. We cover the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So, we're going to just kind of cover mostly the more popular movies that he was involved with. I am going to read through everything starting in 1970. Actually, 74. Well, no, I'll start in 70, and I'll go up through the 90s. So we got in 1970, he wrote a movie called The 12 Chairs. I have no idea what that is, so I'm not even going to get into it. 1974 was Blazing Saddles. 1974, he was in – I wonder if he wrote that. Free to Be You and Me, which I can talk about that one a little bit, actually. Then 1974 also was Young Frankenstein. 1975 was The 2,000-Year-Old Man. And then 1975, When Things Were Rotten. 1975, The Adventure of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother. Okay. 1976, Silent Movie. He was involved with the Electric Company for quite a few. Oh, really? Mel Brooks was involved with the Electric Company for like 700 episodes or something. Where'd it go?
Wow, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, 780 shows. So I don't know what he did for them. Blonde-haired cartoon man. He played a voice. Interesting. 1977. That ran from 71 to 77 that he was involved with that. 1977, High Anxiety. 1978, a TV movie called Peeping Times. 1979, The Muppet Movie. 1981, History of War Part 1. Now, I think these are some of the ones that he just did cameos in, too, because I'm just looking at his whole bio right now. So it's okay. Not just written. But I we'll touch base on the ones that we like the most.
Actually, there's one that when I'm looking at his writing credits in 1980, he wrote The Nude Bomb. And I had no idea that he did that.
Oh, yeah. Wait, why isn't... Oh, you know what? It's not coming up under his writer. Let me pull him up as writer.
Okay.
There we go. Sorry, I had the wrong screen up.
And that was one of those... that was that Get Smart
movie.
The Nude
Bomb, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get Smart, yeah. It was... Yeah. Oh, what was his name? The actor.
Ooh.
Played Maxwell Smart.
Maxwell Smart. Was his name? Come on, Dave. You knew that. Let's see. Don Adams.
Yes, Don Adams. And then, so that was 1980. And then 1981, History of the World Part 1. 1983, An Audience with Mel Brooks. 1987, Spaceballs. And then 1989, a TV series called The Nut House. 1991, Life Stinks. 1993, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. 1995, Dracula, Dead and Loving It. And then it goes into the 2000s. So we'll just stop there.
Right.
So back to the 70s. I think the first one that we should probably talk about is the first one that was on the list, which was Blazing Saddles.
Such an awesome movie. And he was so much fun just in the movie because, I mean, he was a governor.
The gov.
Yeah. the whole time that Hedley Lamarr was, trying to influence him to do the evil bidding, and the governor was just completely... oblivious to it all, and all he wanted to do is have sex with his assistant and play with the paddle balls, and he was so hilarious. It just totally made every scene that he was in, he just stole. I loved him in that role, but for the creativeness of putting that movie together and writing it, it was absolutely hilarious. And you know, I don't know when he's writing it if he visualizes like who's going to be ending up putting it or acting it out, but mm-hmm. if there's any way that he, you know, he had like Gene Wilder in mind. Mm-hmm. I forgot who's the main guy.
Cleavon Little.
Yeah. You know, if he had that matching in his brain when he was writing it, or I don't know how that works. I don't know when these guys are writing it. Do they picture where, you know, who's going to end up putting this, you know, that particular character or the dialogue to life. But to me, it was magical. It had to have been a magical moment of just getting it out, you know, typing it all up and it becoming what it was, you know, which is just an absolute hilarious movie. And big credit to Mel Brooks on that.
Oh yeah. It's definitely just one of the funniest movies. And I love the foundation that this one set up for a lot of his future movies, because a lot of people came back. Like, you know, it's a lot of the same cast that comes back. Like Madeline Kahn was in, you know, a bunch of them. Gene Wilder was in a few, you know, it's just Harvey Korman was involved. It's really cool to see all that. And then Mel Brooks, of course, being a huge part of a lot of his movies that we're going to talk about. This movie was so freaking funny. And I remember watching it on VHS. You know, it's obviously 1974. I was only 6 years old, so I wasn't watching Blazing Saddles when I was six. But I remember getting like into eighth grade. I think it was right around seventh or eighth grade. And we had it on VHS. And I remember having this one time, I had a bunch of guys come over to my house to watch it. It was like five or six guys. And during the campfire scene, when they're eating the beans and all farting, and it just kept going and going and going, you know, of course, you know, seventh grade, you're probably about 12 years old.
Yeah.
Farting is hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the guys that we had over, he actually peed his pants. He was laughing so hard. So yeah, it was pretty funny, but I remember watching that movie over and over again and laughing every time. I can go through like a lot of the scenes, from the beginning to the end, you know, when the main character Bart, Cleavon Little, and his buddy or his other slave worker, basically, they're on the track that the push, like the, I don't even know what they call it, like a teeter totter.
Yeah.
Rail.
Right.
Car or whatever. And they're going down the track and then they sink into the quicksand, and then they have to reroute the track. And that's the whole plot. You know, they got to go through this town called Rock Ridge. There was a peaceful town called Rock Ridge where people lived in harmony. Yeah. From then on, it's one laugh after another, really. The whole thing is just, it's hysterical. And Gene Wilder is great in it. Of course, Bart, Cleavon Little, he was funny in that one. When he first arrives to Rock Ridge, and he like puts a gun to his own head because they start getting weird because he's black, you know?
Yeah.
And that was like, this was, I don't know if it would fly nowadays, like being so heavily racially driven comedy.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's all about the sheriff being black.
Right.
You know?
And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of this movie that I think would just not make it past the political correctness that is today.
Yeah.
But they got away with it. They got away with it because it was the 70s, and even if they would have did this in the 80s, it still would have been, you know, nobody would have checked at the door. Right. But yeah, something happened where we're like, we're not putting that out. So yeah. I couldn't see this getting, you know, distribution, if it was released now. But you're right. A lot of that message and the buildup of it was, just because of, they were had to go a different route for the train. And it was such a simple setup, but it delivered so much great comedy. You know, and even if you talk about, like, where they were putting together, the fake Rick,
the fake town.
And then the toll booth, and it was just such a great payoff for the comedy.
Yeah. Candygram for Mongo.
Mongo like candy.
Oh.
Mongo nothing but pawn in Game of Life.
What about that the scene where Headley is like taking a bath and he needs his frog?
Yeah.
Frog. Ribbit.
Where's my froggy?
Ribbit. Oh, that was a close one.
And then his rant. Hedley Lamarr, his rant when he, because we're going to get all the, smugglers, burglars, and he just goes on and on with all these different criminal names,
Right.
And then, there's a line out just, a line of all these people, and they're all dressed up like all these crazy, criminal type people. And there were two KKK guys and Gene Wilder character and Bart, they go up and they like take their costumes.
Right.
Their KKK costumes. And at one point, Bart, who's black.
Yeah.
Has the KKK thing on. No, wait, how'd it go? And he yells out like, hey, where are the white women at? Or something like that. Oh, no, that's how they got them. That's how they got their attention. That's right.
Right.
Bart jumps up from behind a rock and he goes, hey, where are the white women at? And the two KKK guy goes, go and start, go chase them down. That's when they get their thing and get in line. So
yeah,
it is a crazy, crazy, wacky movie. And then it takes a really odd turn when it actually goes into like the studio where it's like where the movie is being filmed. And then they're on the backstages of the studios of, what was this? Who produced this one? Was it Warner Brothers maybe?
Yeah. When they're on the studio lot.
Yeah. And then they go into like the cafeteria and okay. The great pie fight is happening and there's a huge pie fight.
Right.
It just gets completely nuts. And man, I can't even remember I don't remember the ending. I don't remember how they wrap up the whole thing once they get done with all the craziness through the studio and all that.
Well, I just remember,
how they get back to the main storyline.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah, I forgot how that happened, but I just remembered like the final sequence with them, writing off, Gene Wilder sitting there eating popcorn, from the movie theater.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yes. And he's like, where are you headed? And he goes, nowhere special. And he goes, I've always wanted to visit there.
Uh-huh.
And, they ride off together. And then as the credits start or whatever, you see them stop their horses and get into a car.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, good memory.
I remember that part. I'm just trying to remember how Headley got caught. I just don't remember that part.
Yeah. Another.
No. Okay, wait. They were outside the Chinese theater, and didn't he fall? Or they shot him, and then he ended up.
He falls, yes. Yeah. Onto Hedy Lamarr's. No. What star did he fall on? Or handprint?
Maybe? Was it like John Wayne, maybe? I don't remember. Wow. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So, hysterical movie. Watched it many, many times. It's been a while since I've seen it, though.
Yep.
Very just off-the-wall comedy. Slapstick, a lot of slapstick, and Mel Brooks does that though.
He does
a lot of slapstick stuff. His comedies are goofy. There's not too many of them that are like serious thinkers,
Right.
Like dramedies or anything.
Right, right.
So, well, let's jump to the next one that I think we both want to probably talk about, and that would be Young Frankenstein. And Gene Wilder's back in that one, and Madeline Kahn, and Marty Feldman is the crazy Igor, or Igor, whatever you want to call him. And then you also have Peter Boyle, which I love him in this movie. I think he was awesome as the monster.
He was.
And then Cloris Leachman as Falbruka. Terry Garr, roll, roll, roll in the hay. What, knockers? Why, thank you. Another wacky movie, but from, and I think I remember seeing this actually at the theater, and I must have been probably about 7 years old, and I don't know why my uncle took, like, us and my cousins and to go see Young Frankenstein. But I remember it being something, and it was in when they lived in Atlanta, we were there visiting. So it's a little foggy, the memory, but I do think we went and saw it. So, anyway, awesome, awesome movie. I've watched this again, like, just like Blazing Saddles, I've watched this one over and over again. And, there's just so many funny scenes in it. When they were having dinner after they had first, electrocuted the monster and brought him to life, but they didn't think that it worked.
Right.
Why are you making yummy noises? Yeah. Or who, I've heard this many times. I've used this line many times. Abby something.
Yeah,
normal.
Yep. I actually, I actually brought that YouTube scene up, earlier today. As soon as you had said, we're talking Mel Brooks tonight. I had to watch the Abby Normal scene. And yeah, I promise I will not get upset.
Yeah.
I just love that.
Yeah.
Gene Wilder's delivery of that scene was just spot on perfect. Sit up here. just playing it cool, And that was like, that was the scene right after, they did that whole, sedative.
Sedative, yes.
so then, Igor's got to go back into the, it's three syllables. You're giving something. Give. Okay. Anyway. I loved. The charades and the Abby Normal scene. To me, that is what makes this scene that's my absolute favorite is the Abby Normal scene. But there's so much great stuff in here, the inspector that keeps showing up.
Inspector Kemp, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that with the fake hand, or he's got an amputated hand, and he's got a fake one.
Right.
And he keeps changing it out with different things, like a lighter, a little torch.
And he's got a monocle on his eye patch. I mean, who thinks of that?
It's just wackiness.
It is total wackiness. Complete wackiness. And, to have this thing in black and white so makes it great, as far as visually stimulating. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to do that, obviously, but it really made it, into what felt like a classic horror film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just wonderfully done. Gene Wilder, like I said, spot on delivery. I loved, his kind of getting used to this, Transylvania town of, wherever they were, and, you know, dealing with, you know, the different people and the interactions with the town, and then also trying to further the work. It wasn't his grandfather, right? It was...
Yeah.
I think it was his grandfather.
Great, either grandfather or great-grandfather or something like that.
Right.
He was a descendant of, you know...
Right, right.
Of the original Frankenstein. But, yeah, it's... And then at one point, Igor's hump changes sides.
Right.
Stupid little things like that.
And then... There's actually, if you do YouTube it, you can actually, what comes up is they have outtakes and bloopers.
No way, really?
Yeah, it was.
I'm gonna look that up now.
Yeah, there was one scene that when I guess Dr. Frankenstein, whatever, when his fiance is coming to come visit. And there was the part where he says, you know, Igor, help me with the bags. And he's like, okay, you get the blonde, I'll get the one with the you know, whatever she had on.
Right.
Right. And then all of a sudden he's like, you know, rawr, you know, to her. You know, but they did so many takes of that scene. It was hilarious to watch them kind of mess that up. So if you get a chance, YouTube the bloopers for Young Frankenstein.
All right, I'm gonna I'm making a note now.
It was a fun watch. I didn't realize those were out there until today.
That makes me want to watch a bunch of other ones, or look for a bunch of other ones. You know,
right. I was hoping that there was going to be like an outtake or blooper from like the Abnormal scene, but didn't show that.
Nothing?
Nothing.
So what you're telling me is that we just put an abnormal brain in a 7-foot whatever it was. I can't remember the rest of the line, but yeah.
Yeah, 54 inch wide monster.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then he starts beating the hell out of him.
Yep.
But he won't be upset. He won't get upset.
No. And Terry Garr was beautiful in that movie.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I forgot that that's who that was for a long time because I went a few years without watching it. I watched it early on, you know, back when I was like, you know, when I was watching Blazing Saddles and all that, right around 1980 or so. But, and then years and years went by and I went back and watched Young Frankenstein. I'm like, oh, wow, I forgot that's Terry Garr. Like, and I always loved her and Mr. Mom. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
how old she was when she did Young Frankenstein.
She had to be pretty young.
Let me see. Terry Garr, born in 47.
Okay.
So what is that?
Was 77, she would have been, that would have been 30, so she was 20s, late 20s, 27.
Yeah. Okay.
27 years old or so.
Yeah.
Depending on her birthday and release date.
Sure. Hey, she was born December 11th, 1947. My birthday is December 12th, that's why I said hey like that. So, all right.
Cool.
We got we're close to birthdays. Yeah, so Young Frankenstein, just a absolute classic from Mel Brooks, and that's why when I knew that that was going to be the topic matter, it's like I knew I had to watch that one scene. Had I taken the time, I would have loved to watch just the whole movie today. But I just didn't have the time. But I could have used, you know, a good laughing at for Young Frankenstein. And the good thing about this movie is it always makes me laugh. I don't think I've ever got away from this movie in any kind of foul mood.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, so this does it for me. It does its job. It brings comedy to the table and keeps me going.
Hmm. Yep. So the next one that he wrote was The 2,000-Year-Old Man in 1975. And I don't know that one. It's a TV movie. That doesn't ring a bell at all.
Nope. I got nothing on that.
And then a TV series in 1975 that I don't know anything about when things were rotten. Now, Silent Movie in 1976. Did you ever see this one?
It sounds like something I have, but it's not coming. Like, there's nothing about it that I'm remembering at the moment.
Like scenes that jump out?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting that he took another old-fashioned style of filmmaking, you know, like he went black and white with Young Frankenstein. Now he's making a movie that's silent and it's all subtitles. So you have to read the whole thing.
Okay.
It's somewhat annoying, I think, and I think that's probably why it wasn't as popular. It was pretty funny though, and you have a good lineup. You got Sid Caesar, Dom DeLuise, Marty Feldman again, Mel Brooks himself in there. Bernadette Peters is in that one. He always gets big names in his movies, especially period people, you know, like Bernadette Peters was huge in the 70s.
Right, right.
And Dom DeLuise and Marty Feldman too. And then, like earlier with, Blazing Saddles, Harvey Korman. And then now Sid Caesar, also popular back in those days. So he could get the lineup. That's for sure. I wonder
if, like, you know, it was because, like, somebody, you know, he got the script out to these actors and actresses and they read it and go, hell yeah, I'm in because this is so funny. Or is it just because, hey, Mel Brooks is interested in you for this role and you go, of course.
Right. Like some people go with the Smith brothers, right?
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, well, in the last or 2000s, I guess they're more popular, but something like that along those lines, or if Spielberg, you know, says, hey, I want you in this movie. Yes, sir. Most people are going to say, oh, sure, you bet.
Yeah.
Mr. Spielberg. Thank exactly. you.
Thank you. Can I have another, please?
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe this movie, Silent Movie, was – I remember it was funny to watch, but it didn't have the potency that the you know, Young Frankenstein Blazing Saddles had. And I think that whole silent thing really throws you off. It's just got music in it, you know?
Right.
Like an old silent movie. So he's obviously a lover of the classics if he's bringing those types of things back to try to use them as comedy. So we'll go to the next one since we've gone a lot. The next one he did was High Anxiety. Do you remember this one?
Once again, it's like I'm pretty sure that I've seen it, mm-hmm. but I don't remember anything from it.
There is one scene that I remember that he gets like pooped on by seagulls, and this is, you know, High Anxiety is a spin on Hitchcock films,
right? Right.
Not just, you know, it was the original one was it was based on a Hitchcock thing with, you know, High Anxiety, but. And then they threw in a bunch of other Hitchcock references in there, like when he got basically attacked by a bunch of birds. Was it pigeons? Might have been pigeons. And he just got like bombarded with crap, like pigeon poop. Yeah.
But it's been a long
time I've seen this one, but it was another really funny one.
Looking at the cast, though, you're right. It's almost as if it's the same cast from the previous movie. Mm-hmm. Because you got Madeline Kahn, Cloris Leachman,
Harvey Korman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dick Van Patten was in this one. Let's see, who else? Oh. Don't recognize some of these names. But yeah, I tell you what, Cloris Leachman is so funny. I love her. She's hysterical.
She is.
She's just a funny lady. Even up until recently, she was in Spanglish in about 10 years ago or whatever it was. Oh, Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
And she was so funny in that one. She played a, you know, supporting role, but she was hysterical in it.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, it's my wife likes that movie, and it's not bad. It's pretty good. Kind of cute, you know.
You should write taglines. It's not so bad.
Yeah, not bad.
It's not so bad.
Tia Leone's in that one too.
In Spanglish?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's beautiful.
Yes. Let's see who else. Anyway, yeah, that's the only scene that I remember in that one, but it was another good one. I remember it was pretty popular at the time.
Was there anything in there from Psycho?
Ooh, good question. It's been so long, I don't remember. Oh, yes, it does say at the bottom, it says storyline. An homage to the films by Alfred Hitchcock contains many parodies of famous Hitchcock scenes from The Birds, Psycho, and Vertigo. And Vertigo is what the cover is basically based on, I
right,
think.
Right, right.
With the spinning, falling guy. Yeah. Into, yeah. Yeah, that was a funny movie. It's been so long, though. But we're going to get into a couple other movies coming up into the 80s that I think we'll be able to really talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me get to that. All right, where did it go?
We're going to Nude Bomb then.
Oh right.
It says he wrote it, which surprises the hell out of me. I did not realize that he had written that. But
he was also involved with Get Smart.
Yeah, I noticed that down at the bottom too.
Like earlier, because that was in the '60s or whatever it was.
Right. It says he'd written oh, by release. Yeah, three yeah. episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it, I guess, created by. He gets created by credits for Get Smart.
Yeah.
So I had
138 episodes worth.
Yeah, I
1965 to 1970.
So I didn't realize he was the brains behind that, and that is. Yeah, that's awesome. It's just awesomeness because surprisingly, I didn't realize that he was like the creative juices in getting getting that TV show out. I would figure he would have written more though, than just three episodes though.
Well, creator versus written. I don't know what that means. I don't know the differentiation between them.
Well, I think if I were to come up with a TV show concept, and then maybe I put together the pilot and I kind of give it kind of the framework,
mm-hmm.
I think I get a created by credit for every season that show's on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily have to be involved in it. I don't necessarily have to be a producer or a director or anything like that. I'm just the creator. Of whatever it was. So if I pitch the X-Files concept, I don't have to do a thing with that show after it gets going, from multiple seasons. I'm just the guy that came up with the concept.
Yeah, I just think it was like the way it reads on Get Smart. It says created by, and then it says 138 episodes.
Right.
From 1965 to 1970. So I don't know if, are there more episodes than 138 episodes, or is that the whole series? We'd have to look into that. So anyway, but let's keep moving though.
It's 138 episodes total.
Okay, so then he's just getting credit for creating the whole thing in the first place, and then wrote a few along the way.
Yeah, creator is Mel Brooks and Buck Henry.
Cool. Now, did you see the Nude Bomb?
I did.
I do not remember. I remember it being out, but I don't remember seeing it. I might have. I was a fan of Get Smart, so I probably would have seen it.
Yeah, I the scene that sticks in my brain the most, or one of the scenes, is when they're all in a big conference room, and they're all trying to determine what they're going to do next. And somebody says, we need to, put the cone of silence. So these big cones come down on top of everybody, and it's just like a glass dome. And, everybody's trying to converse with each other, but you can't hear each other. You know, and it was just, you know, all of a sudden you're like trying to pass notes underneath this bubble, you know, and it was like, you know, it made absolutely no sense for this, you know, this cone of silence thing that goes around each person individually versus like the whole room. But, you know, that was the comedy of it, you know, and it was really funny. And for them to come up with a concept that you drop a bomb and it removes everybody's clothing, you know, I mean, that was the damage. That's all it did. You know, it was just, what wacky concept of, you know, of, you know, an evilness, you know, and that's what they come up with, you know. It's a bomb that removes your clothes. Yeah. It's like, okay. but you know, that was the role to Get Smart, you know, and that was the goofiness. And, you know, to me, it really felt reminiscent of, you know, just those really goofy, evil nemesis that you would have on, you know, Saturday morning cartoons. You know, and, you know, those guys that were just didn't have the brain power to really execute on, you know, like world domination. And they surrounded themselves with knuckleheads. And that's kind of what the nude bomb kind of was in a live action movie. So I was a fan of it.
For about, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, because you were breaking up really bad there on my end. Now, it may be recording on your end, so you probably have a lot of what you said, but I don't know how to respond to a lot of what you just said because it was cutting in and out so much. And then I'm like looking at my recorder, so I'm distracted too.
Okay.
So I caught some of it, but
okay.
I think we should just move on.
Okay, fair enough.
So hopefully it doesn't happen again. So the next big one that came out was History of the World Part 1, 1981. And another classic. I love this movie. I like how he made it sound like there was going to be a part two eventually, but there never was. I think it was all a farce, you know, I think it was just part of his shtick. But the way they start out in the beginning of the movie with the cavemen, or monkeys actually, finding the like the giant monolith like they did in A Space Odyssey. And, you know, it just it's a joke on a lot of different movies like that. And then it goes into like the Gladiator times with Ben Hur or the Ten Commandments type of thing where they're making fun of all these movies. It's just a really funny movie all the way around. And I love the cast again. Is, you know, you got Harvey Korman again. Oh, Piss Boy. he's the king. And again, plays a role of authority like he did in Blazing Saddles. Count de Monet.
Count de Monet.
Yep. Not the king, a count.
Yeah.
And,
because Mel Brooks was the king. It's good to be the king.
It's good to be the king. Yeah. He plays – Mel Brooks plays five. Moses, Comicus in the, in the Ben-Hur scene or whatever, either Ben-Hur or Ten Commandments or something. Torquemada. I'm trying to remember that section of the movie. Jacques. And then King Louis the
16th. Yep.
Dom DeLuise is back, Madeline Kahn is back, Harvey Korman, Cloris Leachman, Ron Carey has been, we didn't mention him before, but he's been in a couple of the other ones, previously also.
Yeah,
he's a recognizable face, yeah. Gregory Hines plays Josephus, which was great. I liked him in this one. Let's see, Shecky Green, Sid Caesar again. Just a huge lineup of comedians and comedians, you know.
And then they have Orson Welles as narrator.
That's right. The narrator.
Yep.
That's cool. That was cool. Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen this one too. But I remember it was just it was something that we watched as teenagers several times because it was so funny. And like Mel Brooks is an interesting person to do something like this on, you know, an icon, because there's like two schools of thought for Mel Brooks. Either people love his comedy or they just don't get it and can't stand his comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no middle of the road. Oh yeah, it's kind of funny. It's either like it's stupid or I don't get it. I don't like him. Like my wife does not like any of his. She doesn't like any of his movies.
Really?
Because they're too slapsticky.
Okay.
She doesn't really like that kind of comedy. She wants it to be more clever.
Okay.
I guess. This is not like difficult comedy. What he writes is very, it's really out there and obvious. You know, he's being funny.
Well, I'm going to tangent here for a second then.
Okay.
One of the movies that you guys are really raving on, The Great Outdoors. What does she think of that?
Oh, she loved The Great Outdoors.
Okay. And that's slapstick.
I don't know if I call that slapstick.
Dude, there was like a, what was it, a bear that has buns missing or?
He had the hair blown off his butt.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of slapstick.
It's a little silly. It is a little silly, but for the most part, she does not like that type of comedy. Like the only one that I remember her liking that was really what I would consider like, just goofy slapstick type stuff.
Yeah.
Was Zoolander.
Yeah, I never even gave that one the time of day.
Oh, dude, it's hysterical. I love that movie. It was way too funny. Anyway, so now, tangent?
Yeah, I'm good. I just wanted to find out her thought process on, you know, one of the movies that, you know, both you and Rose really hyped up. So.
Well, I think she really just liked John Candy and Dan Aykroyd and that. And it was a Hughes film too. John Hughes.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. I mean, does John Hughes really write slapstick?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I don't put it into that category. This is goofiness. This is Three Stooges stuff.
History of the World, Part 1
Mel Brooks stuff. Mel Brooks stuff is Three Stooges. And that's what I consider like the original slapstick comedy. So anyway, back to History of the World, Part 1. Just love it. Saw it many, many times back in the day. I haven't seen it in a long time. I wouldn't mind rewatching it nowadays too. I'll see if it still holds up, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it probably would. Because I know that Young Frankenstein does.
Yeah.
And Blazing Saddles probably would also. Although probably a little more offensive, but it might have been back then. So anyway, back to, do you want to move on to another movie? You got any more to say about History of the World Part 1?
Well, I mean, there was, you know, just an interesting take on, you know, what was ancient, you know, Rome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have, like Ron Carey, who, you know, we briefly mentioned as kind of like his agent, you know, mm-hmm. and then books him into the Emperor's palace, you know, you're playing the palace and all that. And, you know, and he was what, traveling philosopher or something like that. I forgot his, you know, what they were calling him. Mm-hmm. You know, and it you know, just a whole concept, and then when they, you know, they ran into Gregory Hines, and you know, then they had to test him to see if he was a eunuch.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of great scenes in this. Yeah. You know, and those are the ones that are just popping into mind right now. You know, but you know, the whole, you know, piss boy thing, good to be the king. All those are just lines that have, you know, lived on, you know, because of this movie.
The life size chess game.
Yes.
That they were playing?
Yep. Hump the Queen.
Hump the Queen. Everybody hump the Queen.
Oh, it was Jump the Queen, I think. Yeah.
Jump the Queen?
Yeah. Bishop jumped the Queen. Rook jumped the Queen. Everybody jumped the Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good to be the king. Yeah, just, yeah, there's so much fun stuff. And once again, the great Madeline Kahn, you know, was, they have her credit as Empress Nympho. love it.
Emperor Nero and Empress Nympho.
Yeah.
Dom DeLuise was Nero.
Yep. And he played a really, and he was hilarious in this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Really played off, you know, the part where he's out there and he starts making jokes, Mel Brooks, and he's like, well, the Emperor's so fat. And then all of a sudden the whole room just kind of turns on him. And it was, yeah, loved it. It was this great comedy timing. And the cast of characters, once again, Mel Brooks really puts it together, you know, with mm-hmm. not just great writing and the delivery, but the cast of characters that, you know, puts this out and really solidifies, you know, this wonderful movie. I just can't imagine anybody being different in any of these roles.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, they're all comedians. I mean, they're just.
Right.
I do think it's funny that Orson Welles stepped in there because he was never a funny guy.
Right.
He was always very serious. So, anyway, do you want to move on to the next one?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that.
So there was a TV special with an audience with Mel Brooks. I never saw it. I don't know what it is. So I'm going to move on to the next movie that I think we're both going to enjoy talking about is Spaceballs, 1987.
I never saw
it. May the Schwartz be with you. Yeah, you've never seen it, my ass. Nice try.
Pizza the Hut.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mog.
Yep.
Or Barf, I'm sorry.
No, Barf. Yeah.
Barf the Mog.
Yeah.
Part man, half part dog or whatever. Mel Brooks played two different President Scroob and Yogurt.
Yep.
Or Yoda. Oh, dude. Dark Helmet.
The Rick Moranis. The great awesome Rick Moranis, man. Yes.
Loved him as the Dark Helmet. Ludicrous speed.
Yeah.
You know, the writing that Mel Brooks does for these movies, it, like I said before, it seems like slapstick, but some of it is pretty, it's a good play on words and a lot of just different, the writing is really funny. I love it. Then you got Bill Pullman as Lone Star.
Yep.
And Daphne Zuniga as Princess Vespa.
Yep.
And I just saw her in something recently and I'm like, where do I know her from? And then it dawned on me it was Spaceballs. Dick Van Patten, again, another recurring cast member.
Right.
He was in, which one was he in? Silent Movie, I think.
Yeah.
And Joan Rivers was in. Oh, yeah. She played the voice of Dot Matrix, like the C-3PO character or whatever.
And that really didn't do much for me. I don't know what it is. I've never been a huge fan of Joan.
Yeah, I'm in that boat.
And so if there was something that kind of deterred me from this movie, that was the Dot Matrix part. Mm-hmm. But you're right.
The name, though.
Yeah, it was a great name and a great play on C-3PO. I think it was great, you know, what they were trying to attempt, but I just wish it was somebody other than Joan.
Yeah.
But you skipped over Michael Winslow, who's, you know, was a radar technician. I loved him from Police Academy.
That's right, from Police Academy. Yeah. That's right. Those goofy helmets that they put on these guys, too.
Yeah.
With big round balls, basically. It is, you know, of course, they're supposed to be just the Empire's soldiers that worked on the Death Star.
Right.
Or whatever it was. not the Death Star. What did it? What did it resemble? What did the big ship that Dark Helmet? What was it like?
Oh, the big ship that. Yeah. Shoot. What was that?
And of course, the Millennium Falcon was actually, what, an RV?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is funny. Yeah, this is, it really is funny. John Candy is great as Barf. And I really think Rick Moranis was the perfect person to play that role for Dark Helmet, though. That was just too hysterical. I can't breathe in this thing.
Well, I remember they're not called the Empire, but like the bad guy's ship turned into like a big vacuum cleaner. I remember that.
All right.
But what did it look like before that? I'm trying to figure that one out.
And it's like it attaches to a maid. A maid is like actually using it like a big vacuum cleaner.
Right.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen this one too. There's a lot of stuff I gotta go revisit, but I just don't have the time. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's like 2 hours here, 2 hours here, 2 hours here, 2 hours here. Well, hour and a half to, 2 hours, whatever it is. 220, 221, whatever it takes.
2x4, 2x5, or 4. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Dave. Get in the, I was like, all of a sudden I found myself like stuck on like all these different pages that I didn't mean to go to. And I'm like, I'm trying to get back. I'm trying to get back. Give me back. Don't go rogue clicking, Dave.
Oh, Dom DeLuise played Pizza Hut voice.
Oh, did he? I did not realize that.
And the Jawas were dinks. Dink, 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 dink. Oh, too funny. So yeah, another great one by Mel Brooks. Do you have anything else to add for this one?
No, I mean, other than just really enjoying it, it sounds like probably just as much as you did. I mean, for me, what was just really great was the comedic element of Rick Moranis, and, so, not expecting him to be, this evil overlord, that, was Dark Helmet. The glasses, the nerdy dude that is Rick Moranis. And, and it was like the last person you would suspect to be, this guy. But that's what made it work, because it was completely unexpected for him to be, the really bad guy.
Mm-hmm. And the helmet was so huge.
Yeah.
In fact, I think they made a reference to that. That's a huge, of course, a euphemism of some sort.
Yeah.
It's a huge helmet. I just love Ludicrous Speed, though. Ludicrous Speed is one of the best things, one of the best lines to come out of that.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what it was, but it was something around like where they're combing the desert.
they had a giant. It was like a hair pick.
Yeah, comb pick
for like froze. Yeah, some of them were using combs, like giant combs.
Right. Right.
And then they showed, I think it was two blacks.
Yeah.
Troopers.
Yeah.
Had a big, like a hair pick that they would use for their throw.
Yep. Yeah.
Again, references to, racial jokes. That's funny.
Yep. But, once again, they're in the 80s, so they can get away with it. All right. So, I guess what? See now, am I like what he's starring in, or am I in where he? Yeah, actor. Now I'm in the acting credits.
Yeah, you got to scroll down. If you're on writing, or if you're in IMDb, you got to scroll down to where it says writer and it's got 44 credits.
Right.
That's what I was kind of going by.
Yeah.
The last one that I can really, that I would even just mention, I remember seeing it once, but it didn't impact me. And I think Rose has mentioned this one a few times.
Men in Tights.
So I think she might be, a fan of this movie. And it's too bad. Maybe she can chime in next time we talk to her. She can throw in a little something about Men in Tights if we can remember to bring that up. What about you on this one?
Yeah, I, I think I may have seen it once. And I don't remember much about it. Let's see, Prince John, Richard Lewis, Cary Elwes, Robin Hood, obviously.
Is that how you say his name?
I have no idea how to say his name. I'm surprised saying it wrong all along.
Cary Elwes?
Elwes.
Is that like Favre?
Brett.
Yeah. Richard Lewis. I saw him live, actually, once, do a comedy bit, and that was... That was pretty funny. He looked very gaunt though at the time when we saw him, but he's a funny dude.
Well, his whole shtick is what, just being kind of like depressed.
Yeah. He was on Curb Your Enthusiasm,
right?
Quite a few of the episodes as himself, you know, because that's how Curb is. But back to Men in Tights.
Yeah.
I remember the movie. I remember it was popular, as one of, Mel Brooks' movies.
Right.
But I do believe I only saw it the one time and I don't remember a lot of it other than they did some kind of dance scene, I think.
Yeah. That's about all I remember also.
Yeah. So, well, we'll have to ask Rose if she has any input on that one next time we talk to her.
Yeah, I'm just, it's not his regular cast of characters, you know, I mean.
No, it's not.
I see Dick,
not,
like, Dom DeLuise and Dick Van Patten's in there.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You have to go a little bit.
Down.
Yeah.
Further, yeah. Yeah, all the rest of them, I don't really remember seeing in his previous ones.
Right.
Look at that. Isaac Hayes, Dave Chappelle, Tracy Ullman. She's funny. She's funny, like. Amy Yazbek. Oh yeah, I know who that is.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Really?
Patrick Stewart. King Richard.
Ah, yes. Cool. So,
trying to see if there's anybody else that's kind of like from his, like, you know, may have been just quickly in it. Yeah, I'm going deep. Never mind.
Now, there was only one other thing that he did in 1995 as far as writing, and that was called Dracula Dead and Loving It. And I happened to catch a couple of clips of it today when I was doing a little bit of research. And it's an animated movie. And it was this clip that I saw was a little on the strange side. You have to look at it sometime, but
it's animated.
Yeah.
It's got Leslie Nielsen in it.
Oh, that's a different one. Oh, I wonder what I caught. Cause I looked up some Mel Brooks stuff and this one came up. I wonder what it was. No, I remember this one now, Dracula Dead and Loving It, that's cool that he teamed up with Leslie Nielsen.
Right.
Cause that's a perfect combination. Leslie Nielsen has been doing slapstick as an Airplane and, the naked gun and all that stuff. That's definitely slapstick. That seems like it could have been written by Mel Brooks, those types of movies. Cause yeah. They're really in the same category of comedy. So Leslie Nielsen working with Mel Brooks. And I don't remember if I saw this one though. Did you?
Once again, it's like one of those things. I'm pretty sure I've seen it once, but I don't remember a lot of it. I was looking at the cast, and the guy that plays Renfield is Peter McNichol, And I thought, what a great pairing of having Leslie Nielsen as Dracula, Peter McNichol as Renfield, you know, and a Mel Brooks vehicle. You know, and I was like, yeah, I wish I remember more of it, but I, you know, I, in my brain, I'm like, that's a great combination right there.
Mm-hmm. Amy Yazbek is in this one too, along with Harvey Korman.
Now, Amy Yazbek, and, what has she been in?
She was just in, the previous one we're looking at, the Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it looks like he brought a couple people from that cast over also. And then, Mel Brooks is actually in this one too. Professor Van Helsing. God, I don't know if I saw this one. It came out when? 95?
Let's see.
Yeah, 95.
Yeah, 95.
Yeah, that was right after Chrissy and I got married, so it would probably not be something on our list of things that we would see together. Since she doesn't like that kind of comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I remember more of this one. I just don't.
Yeah, and then he went on to do a few other things after. He didn't do anything else in the 90s, but he did quite a few other things in the 2000s. Which one was in 2005, which is The Producers, which was actually a remake of his original release of The Producers back in 1967. So we didn't cover that because it was previous to the 70s and a little bit before our time. I do remember seeing the original Producers with Dowd had, I believe that had Dom DeLuise and Marty Feldman also back in the original one. And then 2005 was Matthew Broderick and a couple other people. Anyway, so that about wraps it up for Mel Brooks. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did you know that he wrote a animated series for Spaceballs?
I saw that on the list, but I never saw any of them. I don't know when were they out.
It looks like 2008 and 2009. I'm just thinking, how awesome is that? But I had no idea that even existed.
Mm-hmm.
But for him to be the creator and writer of two of the episodes,
mm-hmm.
you'd be like, why isn't that still like a thing now? I mean, if it's 2008, 2009, but as much as everybody loves Spaceballs, you would figure that would be, yeah, as long as Mel Brooks was wanting to put something out, you know, he, mm-hmm. you know, it'd be like, yeah, let's keep going. I don't think you can really get there. You can go on and on with that is what I'm trying to get to. And so I'm just wondering, why isn't that still a thing? Why did it only last two seasons or one season?
Yeah, really one season, 15 episodes.
Yeah.
You could really take that a long way, like you were saying too, because there's so many, I mean, you've got, you know, even up to today, you have 9 or 10 different, Star Wars that you could be doing a spoof on.
Right.
Right. Just those alone. And then just have smaller, you know, usually if it's a animated TV series, it's going to be shorter shows, you know, either fit into a half hour block or an hour block, probably half hour. So it'd be 22 minutes mostly.
And Daphne Zuniga is reprising her role as Princess Vespa.
Oh, she plays the voice.
Yeah. And, Joan Rivers does Dot Matrix, even though that would bug me, but you know, she's still in there.
And Mel Brooks plays his own yogurt and President Scroob.
Yeah. Now, of course, they wouldn't be able to get, you know, the original Dark Helmet because he doesn't, like, do anything anymore.
And also Barf is John Candy, who is passed by now. Right. But by then, anyway.
Right.
I might have to look. I might have to see if we can find that one on YouTube or something.
I am very curious about that.
Yeah.
Spaceballs. Don't have to wait for me. We can continue talking.
Okay. Well, you know, that's pretty much it for the movies that I really liked of Mel Brooks during that time of those 30 years. You know, you got a handful of movies that really jump out at you. And I think most of them are, the ones that most people know of, you know, the Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles and History of the World and Spaceballs, especially. I think that kind of revived his career after a while. Robin Hood didn't do as well. Dracula didn't do as well, but Spaceballs was a big hit. And it's still, to this day, I think a lot of people still love that movie. So, anyway, that is our show for the Mel Brooks icon of the, you know, as a writer. Although we didn't, you know, we didn't touch base too much on what, when he played the roles, mentioned him a few times, but he was in a lot of stuff too, a lot of his own stuff. So, Mel Brooks, very awesome, very funny guy. And that's, do you have anything to add about Mel Brooks?
Yeah, it's just, it's good to be the king.
Good to be the
king. he, you know, did such a great job of putting together the framework for, you know, these great movies. And then his delivery of his comedic timing, Mel is great. He just absolutely is. And I'm glad that, you know, he contributed so much. It would be so fun just to see what that creative process looks like for him, you know, of sitting down and coming up with these different scenarios and these different situations. And, like, you know, I mean, the whole, situation like a Young Frankenstein and, you know, Abby Normal. How does somebody think of like that, you know? And it was just,
yeah.
But he does. And yep. It's amazing. It is just absolutely amazing. And I'm so glad that, you know, all these movies have got to enjoy as, you know, I've aged and, you know, really appreciated them, you know, and then being kind of, you know, it's what made a lot of, you know, the 70s, 80s, in some cases the 90s great, you know, was the inclusion of his movies.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So, well, let's wrap up the show then.
Cool.
And since we're changing roles up a little bit, well, first of all, you want to go to, BonsaiRetroClub.com. And you can download listen to any of our podcasts all of them that we've done. Or you can go to iTunes and get it there. And please go and leave a review for us. And then we also on our website, you can go to something called Patreon. And this week, Dave's going to tell us about Patreon.
Well, Patreon is a mechanism that we'd like everybody to go in and, if you are a follower and you listen to our episodes and you want to say, you know, it'd be really great to help these guys out with, you know, the production, which isn't free. That's how you can do it. You can go to the link on the website, which is BonsaiRetroClub.com, and go down to the bottom. There's that Patreon link and you can donate, you know, some money to help with the production. And that could be either, you know, we'll use that for the web hosting or the hosting of the actual podcast feed itself. And it'd be great if, you know, all of that stuff was just, you know, because it's out on the internet free, but it's not, unfortunately. So that's really what Patreon is. It's a way to do that for us. And we would definitely appreciate it, and we've also have plenty of content that we would like to share to those that want to give something, and, you know, and that would be like bonus material of stuff that we wouldn't produce on the regular feed for the podcast. So we'd still love to do that.
Yeah. Another way to support the show is to by wearing some of our awesome gear, and you can get that on the website also.
Yeah.
Just by clicking on that and getting a shirt or something along those lines. Another thing on the website, which is really cool, is you can leave a voicemail for us. Now, you only got 90 seconds, but you can go in and leave a quick little voicemail for us, whether you want to – you can correct us on something if we said something wrong, or you can encourage us on other things, or even throw ideas out there for us to talk about. We'd love to get a voicemail from you. So do that, and I guess that's about it. And so I guess we end the show by saying be excellent to each other and have a good whatever.
Bye.
May the Schwartz be with you.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai Danielson!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 All right. Cool. Cool. Wrapped up kind of early, too.
What time is it? We're at 8.
9:55.
Well, 8:55 my time, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That means I can go to bed a decent time tonight. Because I can never just go right to bed after a show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got to like unwind. I got to get my mind out of whatever we were talking about. Because I get worked up. I get excited, you know? I get – my mind's racing at this time, and then I just can't just stop it. Stop recording and go straight to bed.
Okay. That's fair.
I got to like – either I got to go watch a little TV or something to just get my mind back out of – what we were just doing, or I'll play something, some stupid video game, a mindless video game on my iPad or something. Okay. Laying in bed. Yeah.
You know what I actually have from Christmas, and I didn't take a picture of it for like my desk setup, but I brought it up to my desk. Let me see if you can pick up on this based on the sound. Let me turn it on first. So here we go.
Is that a handheld version of
See, I can't beat the high score. I don't know why. It's like what I've got is it's this really miniature version of Galaga.